Hey, hello everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Apricast, where we are, as always, physically distancing. Well, not always, but since lockdown, state of disaster was put in place, we are physically distancing. So, welcome to my two co-hosts today, Clinton Matos and Robin Lee Chetty. How are you guys doing?
Good.
I'm starting to get cabin fever now.
You and me both, Robin. You and me both. Clinton, how are you doing? Nice to have you back after your study break.
Yeah, I was studying is not fun. I'm kind of glad to be back. It sounds strange. A lot of people, they take leave and then they're like, oh, I can't believe I'm back at work. But I much prefer working than studying. So it's good to be back.
Cool. So let's jump right into the news. Robin, there was a big one this week. Amazon moved from South America to Africa. No, I'm just kidding. AWS, what you got for us, Robin?
Yeah, so now the local presence has increased. The availability zone here in Cape Town teased for a little over a year now. Mm-hmm. Amazon kind of laid out their intention to get the availability zone in Cape Town and then use that as a jumping off point for the rest of Africa. So now that is the case. It spun up this week, or at least it was announced and confirmed this week. And now the wait is now on to see what kind of services they're going to have available to local SMEs and those and enterprises. I know there was a lot of chatter online, especially regarding a African Fortnite server.
Yeah.
They haven't commented on that, but what we do know is what businesses can look forward to. And what we did was we did also a kind of a comparison, or rather just a list of all the services that are currently available. So as it's at the time of writing, what is available in the Cape Town region, the amount of services total 44 at the moment. Unfortunately, that's the lowest number out of all the availability zones in the EMEA region.
Mm-hmm.
I think we're quite similar to the Bahrain availability zone, but as it stands now, we are still the lowest. So hopefully in the coming months and years, be closer to what Ireland, for example, has, which I think is much the leader into the EMEA region. So yeah, that's AWS. So we'll see what happens with that in the year to come.
Fortnite gets its servers.
Oh man! As the news broke, I remember just typing out a tweet saying, "I can hear the petitions going up for Fortnite servers in Africa as I speak." And then, what happened a few hours later?
Yeah, what's hilarious is that those petitions existed even before the servers arrived here. If you go search on change.org for the words Fortnite and Africa, there's like a dozen that have come out already.
I mean, there was when Azure landed here last year, I remember there was a push for local servers. And I was like, but most of these games don't even run on Azure anyway. Yeah.
Sorry, just to end off that, Fortnite actually does run on AWS, so
yeah.
At least this time they're right about something.
Clinton, what have you got for us about Bionicle?
Yes, so for everybody who doesn't remember, I'm probably scratching a deeply hidden part of their brains when I mentioned the word Bionicle. That was a series of toys created by Lego in the early 2000s, and it was very popular for, I'd say, just under a decade. But it was eventually cancelled. Lego tried to bring it back, but there wasn't much. There was a lot of interest, but the sales weren't good, so it was cancelled again. And right now, it's just dead. There's no official stuff being made for it, but there is fan stuff being made for it. More specifically, an entire fan game called Quest for Matanui. If you're wondering about that weird word, Matanui is the setting of the whole story. So Quest for Matanui is an open-world RPG that is being developed by one person. I don't know how you pronounce it. Their username is Craney. And earlier this week, even though the game's been worked on for 6 years at this point, they released a trailer earlier this week. And then going off of the back of that, I actually got in contact with them. And we had a nice little chat. And by the time you guys read this, the interview with them will be up. But you can also watch the trailer. There's also a 12-minute gameplay walkthrough, and then there's a third video that came out recently about the combat systems in the game. I hate to bring up the comparison, but it is inspired by Dark Souls, and that's not me postulating. When I interviewed Craney, they did say that Dark Souls was an inspiration.
That means it's going to be really difficult.
I don't know if that pertains to difficulty. I think it more talks about the nature of the combat, where it's kind of hack and slash, but you need to move around because you can be killed easily and stuff like that. We don't know. The game doesn't have a release date right now. It was just kind of, hey, here's this thing I've been working on for a long time. And to be honest, it looks really good. The animation and the quality of the 3D models is actually superb. And we'll need to see what happens with this. The worry, as always, is that when you announce a fan game, the owner of the license will just come and shut you down. We've seen that dozens of times with Nintendo properties. I don't know what LEGO is going to do. LEGO is only really litigious if there's a leak of something they're working on and somebody puts it out early, then they'll kind of, they won't sue you immediately, but they'll send you an email saying, can you take that down, or we'll have to escalate things. I don't know what they do about fan games. I think this is the highest profile fan game to be announced. So we'll see. Check out the story on that below, as well as my interview.
Cool. And then I have some news regarding Google, which is, it's kind of weird that this wasn't in place to begin with, but now it is. Google will start requesting that advertisers verify their identities. So they did have this policy in place last year for political advertisers, but now they're expanding that to all advertisers. They said that they are going to launch the initiative in summer in the US, which is winter here, but the Google Director of Product Management, John Canfield, said that it could take upwards of a year to roll this out. So if you're an advertiser that uses Google advertising, pretty soon you're going to have to start verifying who you are, verifying your identity. And that's to detract people from abusing Google adverts, number one. Number two, so that people know who ads are being served by. In terms of political, that's a little bit more important in terms of political adverts. But I would also argue that knowing that the person that is advertising something on Google's front page is indeed the person that I'm going to get that service from. We've seen a lot of times where people click links they shouldn't, especially now with video conferencing. A lot of cyber criminals are using those names to try and push malware through the pipelines of the internet. And I think something like this is a really good idea, but also, why has it not always been a policy, Google? I do wonder. But anyway, if you are an advertiser with Google, that's something to take note of, is that soon you will need to verify that you are who you say you are. And yeah, there will be a link to the story at the bottom, including a link to how Google will verify identities, the processes it will go through, and all that sort of stuff. So links to that at the bottom. But now we're going to talk about something that I'm sure everybody knows about, the COVID-19 pandemic.
What you're gonna say, I'm a person not knowing how to put on a mask.
Oh, come on, guys. Let's just address that right now. The first time you put on a mask, did you put it on perfectly?
I didn't have the entire nation with me, so I don't know.
Yeah, okay. If I had the entire nation watching me put a mask on for the first time, it would have been way funnier than Ramaphosa's attempt.
Yeah, I think it unfortunately really detracted from the avatars of the actual address. I really hated it.
So, if you don't know what we're talking about, I don't know what you've been doing for the past couple of weeks, but last night Cyril Ramaphosa addressed the nation regarding the easing of lockdown restrictions. Not the lifting of lockdown, not the cancellation of lockdown, not lockdown is over, party 2020, easing of lockdown restrictions. And there were a number of things. This followed a briefing earlier this week in which Ramaphosa outlined a 500 billion, with a B, Rand stimulus package. I'm sure we will touch on that throughout the course of this discussion. But our main focus is going to be the easing of lockdown restrictions that was announced on Thursday evening. I just want to let everybody know that as of time of recording, which is currently 1:15 on Friday afternoon, there is very minimal information regarding what industries will be open and like details regarding the easing of restrictions. If this comes out after that, or after or you're listening to that, this after those regulations have been put in place and those announcements have been made, we'll have links to government websites at the bottom of this post so that you can get the most up-to-date information. What do you guys think of what happened last night? Let's start off there. Are you happy, sad, glad, breathing a sigh of relief? How are you guys feeling after last night?
I want to know is why is our government such a sieve? Because this was kind of leaked. Images were floating around about
plans. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to stop you there, Clinton, because I saw two images that were circulating this week, and none of them were correct.
Yes, I know they weren't correct, but the thing is people... Okay, so here's the thing. We don't know if a lot of people correctly predicted what was going to happen or they had insider information. The prospect of a lessening of the lockdown with several stages was either predicted or it was floating around for at least the last week.
Fair enough, but I will argue that none of those were from official government sources. None of them came from presidency or government or the Department of Health.
Yes.
And in that case, all of those sources are moot. Whether they were accurate or not it doesn't matter because they didn't come from an official source. So for me, it's kind of like ignore anything that does not come from an official source. Because the problem
the reason
is,
I bring it up is that the when I was watching the video, it wasn't a surprise. I know a lot of people who don't, you know, catch up with rumors and stuff like that. They were quite surprised. So that's the whole reason I brought it up there. So to me, it wasn't a surprise, but I know to a lot of people it was a surprise.
So, okay, Robin, how do you feel about what happened last night?
I think like a lot of people, I had a feeling that a phased approach was coming. I wasn't expecting it to kind of the form of stages. Mm. And reflecting on it now, I think it's probably a better way to go about it, purely for the fact, say, for example, a second wave of COVID-19 infections happened, then we'll need to change the status and be more strict in terms of the regulations. So, I know it's quite difficult for a lot of people. They're struggling working and studying and living at home at the moment. But I think it's probably the best course of action to kind of have a staged approach, similar to what we do, what ESCOM does with load shedding. Mm. That's kind of my initial feelings about it at the moment.
So my thing is, like I said, like I saw all the leaked documents and I got very angry because people are sharing this stuff and it's kind of like everybody just kind of forgot about the regulation of fake news. Like, hey guys, this is not, if it's not coming from government, don't share it. Plain and simple. I'm gonna be an a-hole about this, is that folks sharing stuff saying, oh, I got this from the SA Tourism website. Who cares? Who cares where you got it from? It's not coming from government.gov.za. It's not coming from the presidency and it's not coming from the Department of Health. We should be very careful about just seeing, oh, this looks legitimate. Let's share it around. So when I saw the staged approach, I was like, oh, okay, this is cool. Let's see how it plays out. I kind of like the fact that we are going for risk mitigation rather than, oh, let's see how we can push the economy into life as quickly as possible. So my feeling is that everybody that shared that those things around shouldn't be doing that and should be taken to task for doing that. And I like the way that government has approached this. So my next question to you is this going to address some of the issues that have propped up since lockdown began? Let's start with you, Robin.
I'm not 100% sure, purely for the fact that a lot of the issues that have popped up are as a result of people not listening to restrictions. And I'm not referring to what some things that the SANDF have done and some of the stuff the government has done. I'm looking specifically at the general consumer and the general South African. Mm-hmm. A lot of the reasons why we haven't been able to flatten the curve as well as we could have, I think really stems from the fact that people aren't really adhering to lockdown regulations that they should. So again, I think the stage, the introduction of stages really should help on paper. But again, unless you have a buy-in and unless you have residents of the country adhering to it as well, it's not going to do any good, I think.
Clinton, do you think that this is going to help address some of the stuff that's happened, like businesses being closed, economy being in disarray, that sort of stuff?
So I don't know if it's going to directly help. I think it's kind of like a bandage over it's a really neat thing. It's a bandage over a wound which hasn't been inflicted yet, right? The whole point the lockdown is happening is to give the hospitals time and to give the testing time to do their work, to, you know, maybe find ways to treat this and everything. But like Robin says, people have already demonstrated that they're quite idiotic and they won't follow the word of the government and they're out on the streets partying and doing whatever. That being said, I do think it will help in some ways. For example, they're finally letting people buy cigarettes. I have no idea why that was prevented in the first place. Let me just say, I don't smoke. I've never smoked. And I think smoking is something you really shouldn't do. But I have no idea why the government said people shouldn't and we're not going to sell smokes. I understand the reasoning for alcohol, because when people drink at home...
Dutch courage.
They get into fights and they can cause accidents which will fill up the hospitals. I understand why alcohol has been disallowed, but I just don't understand the thing with the smokes. So first of all, I think that's going to go a way to increase morale in the country. And then on top of that, I think what the announcement of the levels do is give people light at the end of the tunnel, right? I wrote a story about this earlier today. The government has released a series of, not infographics, but just, you know, images that you can share around, which has the summary of the speech on it, basically. And it's in a nice little package. And on there, you can look where we are currently in stage 5, which is the worst. And we're going to go into stage 4 when the 1st of May runs around. But when you look on that graph, you see, you know, we were on 5 and we're going to 4. You know, maybe in the future we can get to 3 and 2 and finally to 1, right? So in that way, I think it helps morale to see that there might be light at the end of the tunnel. Will things get worse? Probably. Will this help? We don't know yet. But I do think that what they did last night is overall positive. I don't think anyone will argue with that. And I do think it's really good for having a big game plan to see the country the rest of the way through. And you, Brendan, to end that off, what do you think of it?
So I think it's good for 2 reasons. So one is the reason that you highlighted, Clinton, is that it gives people light at the end of the tunnel. It's like, oh, here's a path that we can work towards, right? Is that it's not going to be a full lift of lockdown, but I mean... As we toe the line, we can see, okay, this is working. It gives a way for people to see, hey, okay, I've stayed indoors for a month now, and we've gone down a level. Cool, that's awesome. But the other thing I want to say, I want to point out is how these levels are going to be determined. President Ramaphosa did say that each province and district, their alert system will work independently. So it's not going to be like Eskom saying it's load shedding stage 2 for everybody around the country. It will be, for instance, where there is a high concentration of infections, such as the Western Cape at the moment and Gauteng and I believe it's KZN, where there are high levels of infection and a high risk of transmission. I think that the level will be a lot higher in certain stages, obviously, as we progress through this disease. So I think that for me shows me that government is taking a much more proactive approach. Not saying that they haven't been proactive, because governments, the whole reasoning behind lockdown was to get ahead of this thing before it got really bad. And that has been shown to work. I mean, we are now looking at the end of this month, and next week, Friday, this time, we're going to level 4, where I am able to finally get my nicotine fix again, which is fantastic for me, and it has sucked without cigarettes, but hell, it's everybody's suffering. I can suffer
as
well.
I just query something quickly.
Yes.
So if you're explaining to me that each province will have, I guess, different levels or different alerts.
Yeah.
Depending on the severity of infection.
Yeah.
What happens in terms of traveling in between provinces? Because I know that during stage four, for example,
yeah,
traveling between provinces is not allowed unless it's for the delivery of essential goods, funerals, or extreme circumstances.
Yeah.
But if neighboring provinces around Gauteng, which in all likelihood will probably remain on one of the higher alert levels, given the amount of infections we have, those provinces are at a lower level, say alert level 2 or 3 or maybe even 1. What happens then? Because now I'm starting to see potential for confusion amongst people.
So to answer your question, Robin, I'm not 100% sure. So just to quote the president here, to ensure that our response to the pandemic can be as precise and targeted as possible, there will be a national level and separate levels for each province, district, and metro in the country. So that's to correct myself, then there will be sort of a stage two, but then if you're in Gauteng, for instance, in a region where there is a high risk of infection, then that will, you'll obviously be in a higher stage, I believe, like stage 5, stage 4, rather than stage 3 or stage 2 or 1. How that will affect travel, yeah, I see what you're saying, Robin, in terms of that's going to create confusion for people, or the potential for confusion, because, I mean, you could be coming from the Free State where there is, say, it's an alert level 1, and you want to go to Gauteng where there is now an alert level 5, and they're like, oh, sorry, you can't come in, and you get arrested because you're not meant to be traveling there. I think it's a tricky situation, but I think that in terms of how this will be communicated, government has been pretty clear in terms of how it's communicated things, given people a lot of avenues. I think that one of the avenues of that communication will be the sacoronavirus.co.za website. Obviously, media will play a role in getting that message out. But I do hope that there is sort of a central repository where people can go and kind of see, okay, well, I need to go to Gauteng for business, let's say. We're at alert level 1 in Northwest. I need to go to Gauteng for business, but they're on alert level 5. Or how do I know that?
So I have the transcription of the speech from last night in front of me here. Mm-hmm. And it says, in regards to level 4. So this is level 4, we're on 1st May. No travel will be allowed between provinces except for the transportation of goods and exceptional circumstances such as funerals. So at least in terms of level 4, it's not allowed. But like Robin said, I don't know how that works if we now have a level 3 province and a level 4 province, or like a 3 and a 2. So we're just going to have to wait for government to give us clarification.
So a lot of this stuff...
It's worthwhile mentioning that.
Yeah.
A lot more information is going to be shared by government next week.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that.
We're finding out, for example, how different industries will be allowed to bring portions of their workforce back into offices and things like that. So I just wanted to raise a query, but also I think it's also worth that we're still going to communicate a lot of the kind of finer details next week as well. So potentially we should have a better idea of what's going to be happening next week.
So another thing that I do want to bring up is that the range of goods that will be sold. So at the moment, as we all know, you're only allowed to buy essential goods and essential services. And a couple of people have tried to get around that. Government came through last week to say that the sale of hot food is not permitted. The reasoning behind that is questionable at best. I did think that there was a good reason behind it, but government has since come out giving the reason, and it's not all that good. But now there's this stipulation as regards Ramaphosa's speech last night. The range of goods that may be sold will be extended to incorporate certain additional categories. These will be detailed by the relevant ministers. Now, I don't know what that means. We know that alcohol is not part of the stuff that can be sold. However, that seems to be largely an assumption, because it doesn't say that alcohol is not permitted to be sold in here. I didn't see it in his speech. Did anybody else see it? Am I wrong?
Yeah,
I didn't make mention specifically of alcohol.
Yeah.
As far as I understand, pubs, beans, restaurants are still going to be closed.
Yeah, that was the only stipulation that was made. So as far as alcohol, because it wasn't expressly named or explicitly named rather, explicitly named. I'm not sure whether it will be sold. I did see that there was mention of like agriculture being open, and that makes me wonder about wine farms and that sort of stuff. I think that we need to wait a bit until next week for these things to be, all the announcements to be made by government. But on the same token, Ramaphosa did say that they are in consultation with businesses. So it does make me wonder if there are certain businesses that have approached governments and said, hey, can we start operating? But then it also makes you wonder, well, which is government going to overlook certain industries because those folks aren't necessarily going to have representation at a governmental level? So, for instance, smaller businesses, are they going to be able to open up? And if so, in what regard? What industries of those small businesses going to open up? I mean, there's just so many questions now that we have to answer. And we've got, what is it now, 6 days with 2 public holidays coming up. So we've literally got 3 working days in which stuff can happen. Though that having been said, government has been burning the midnight oil over the weekend as well. So the time frames here are very, very small. Yeah, and it does concern me given how slow some of the measures that were announced at the beginning of the lockdown period were put into place, and how quickly these things can be turned around. I mean, just to kind of build off of that point, the sale of hot food was carrying on throughout lockdown until last week Thursday, when government came out and said, oh, well, it's not allowed. And I mean, when I went to go and do shopping last week, the hot food counter was open. There were people working there. And like, I even saw some cops buying food from the hot food counter, which means that it wasn't clear that hot food was not allowed to be sold. And I think it's on government, on COGTA, to make those stipulations very clear now more than ever, especially as we start easing lockdowns, because I think the danger is that folks are going to see this as, oh, lockdown is over, but it's not. Not by any stretch of the imagination is lockdown over. There are certain restrictions that are being eased. And I think that government needs to be very, very clear about what is permitted and what is not.
Yeah, we'll hopefully have like a nice little table or a graph or something with everything listed. Even better, I think they should make a little sub-site that says, you know, I work in X industry, and then you type in that industry and it says, this is how you're affected right now. That would be very difficult to implement because there's a lot of different jobs out there, but they need to do something in the coming weeks. Hopefully before 1st May, you know, we don't want to go into level 4 blind.
Yeah, absolutely. You don't want to have a case where companies go through the processes, get their accreditation through the CIPC, and are operating, and then a week down the line, government comes in and says, "Ah, no, you're not allowed to be operating. Who said you could operate?" So I think there is a big responsibility on government here to be incredibly clear about what is permitted and what is not permitted. I think because that is a confusion that came out with the original regulations regarding the lockdown, and then the amendments that came after that, and then the amendments that came after that. It's just, it wasn't clear about what could operate and not. I mean, for instance, we had Rootwear, who got a license for essential goods, but nowhere in the essential goods list did it say anything to do with ICT. Okay, the amended regulations now state that, but originally there was no provision for computer equipment or ICT technology. And like, as people started working from home and laptops started failing and printers started failing, people started saying, "Well, I can't work anymore. What am I meant to do?" And it's those sorts of things that need to be accounted for when you put those regulations in place. Because, I mean, in some of these places, one day trading is great. But then if you can't trade for another week while you wait for government to and ah over whether you're allowed to be operating or not, like, that could be even more detrimental to you. So, Yeah, I think that there's a big onus on government here to sit down and go, right, let's go through this piece by piece. And it's going to take time and people are going to work over hours. I get that. And that sucks. And they're already working for less money. But yeah, I think it's highly, highly important that government does this and goes, right, so what's open, what's not open? Is there anything in particular that you guys would like to be opened?
Food things, not even restaurants, just like takeout places.
Mm.
I think, again, you know, aside from there being access to food, I can always go and buy a loaf of bread, right? Mm-hmm. But I really think it's a morale thing where, you know, you bite into a sugar and fat-filled burger and you're like, yeah, my brain MSG. Really likes that right now. You know, when it announced the lockdown, I was doing some very, you know, light reading into like survival kits and stuff like that. And I'm definitely not an expert. But what a lot of them say is when you're shopping for a situation like this, you may go past the sweets aisle or the chocolate aisle and you think, oh, well, I'm not going to get that. That's irresponsible. But when you're stuck eating your 10th can of baked beans, you're like, oh, I'd really go for a bar one right now, right?
Yeah.
So I'd really like some food places to open up again. But, you know, that has such a worry about people gathering because eating is a social thing and people want to go to restaurants. I'd really like small restaurants to open in the capacity where you can go by and order to pick up instead of sit down. I think they'll do a lot to, again, boost morale, get food in people's stomachs. And something else that they should do is that they need to make sure people are getting food. That's been a problem since day one. I don't know if the level system has anything to do with how they're going to get food to people who can't have it. But yeah, those are my two wishes right now, I think.
Robin?
Yeah, I think much like Hinton, my immediate concern is probably food. Personally, I haven't had anything to worry about. I've been fortunate enough to live close to number of retailers, and I could get hands on food. Also, I'm living solo, so I don't have to worry about a family to provide for. But yeah, I think probably food is the most essential thing. I guess a bit more anecdotally, perhaps more access to online and e-commerce platforms. Mm. That for right now they're limited to essential goods. I want to continue living my life and doing things, and that requires me being able to purchase things that I need. It might not necessarily be essential for the scheme of things, but is something that I want. That's pretty much it for me.
Yeah, that was kind of my thinking as well, was mainly around e-commerce. And not necessarily just because, hey, I want to buy myself a new graphics card, or I want to buy myself a new set of headphones or whatever. Like e-commerce in the sense that those industries have a lot of people that feed into those industries. I mean, you have small businesses that are suppliers for big guys like Takealot and Loot and that sort of thing. And having them being able to operate may mean that those businesses are able to operate in a limited capacity as well. And I'd like to see more of that. Something that, like you guys, for me, would be a really great thing is to have like takeaways open, so that those who can afford takeaways are able to get them pickup or delivery or something like that. But then those people who rely on salaries that work at those places, which let's be honest, are generally your low income earners, can actually earn a living. Because one of the things that I've had a couple of discussions about this week is the missing middle. Folks who are not paid enough to be able to live comfortably month to month, but also earn too much to qualify for social grants. Like, I feel that those people are being really, really screwed over by the system at the moment, especially as regards food and that sort of stuff. I mean, some of these people are earning minimum wage at the moment, and if you can tell me that somebody can survive off minimum wage for a month and feed a family of like five on minimum wage, I'll just laugh at you, because that's not possible.
Well, Jan, it's not even It's not even surviving on minimum wage. It's surviving on last month's minimum wage.
Exactly.
That's the massive problem.
And then to say, like, I'm sure that a lot of companies haven't said that they are closing yet, but that creates a problem for these minimum wage workers, is that, okay, but I'm still employed. Sorry, you don't qualify for a social grant, but this month you can't eat because you've already spent last month's salary. So for me, I think that in that regard, that needs to be a consideration that's made. I understand that government wants to limit the interaction of people and stop people from sitting at restaurants and that sort of stuff. I get that. Absolutely. It makes sense. But the folks who desperately need to make money in order to feed their families aren't able to do that at the moment. Like, we are in a very fortunate position in that we can keep working, we can keep earning a salary, but many people don't know if that's going to be the case moving forward, even with these risk mitigations put into place at these levels. So I'd like to really see government looking at those people as well, the people that work those minimum wage jobs, but are now just kind of in no man's land. They don't know where they stand. They don't qualify for social grants. They don't qualify for food grants, but they are suffering at the moment. So
what are your thoughts on $500 billion that was announced?
Ooh,
it's a really big figure on the face of it, but
yeah,
so break it down, it seems like it's more aimed towards your larger enterprises than your smaller ones. And in, as far as I understand, these are loans, so
yeah, so
we'll have to pay.
So I have a loans are a tricky business because I understand why they exist, and I can understand that as a company lending money to somebody, you do kind of want that money back. At this point in time, I don't know whether asking people to take on more debt so that they can stay out of debt is really the best solution. I'm not an economist, though, obviously, so take my words with a grain of salt. Something I do want to touch on, though, is the 350 Rand grant that some people will be receiving. Almost nothing. But then on the same foot, it's kind of like, where do we get the money from? I mean, like, I saw a couple of people saying, oh, well, it's 500 billion Rand. Just give everybody in the country R1 million. Doesn't work like that. Learn how to do maths. Also, people saying that we should print the money ourselves. I'd like to introduce you to a term called hyperinflation and two countries known as Zimbabwe and Venezuela. So don't print 500 billion Rand. Doesn't just work like that.
I mean, America's printing all their money right now and they seem to be doing fine, right?
I mean, that's a matter of opinion. My opinion is no, it's not.
Well, politically, they're not doing well, but in terms of economics, they have a struggle.
I mean, I don't want to get into it, but the dollar is really strong right now, and I'm not sure why. Anyway, that's a discussion.
Anyway, let's not get into conspiracy theories. So
it's
about
the gold standard.
But yeah, okay, so 350 Rand, it's very low. And I understand that a lot of people kind of went, but this is not enough for people. On the same token, it's kind of like also, where does the money come from? And once you start breaking down the 500 billion Rand, which Robin did earlier this week, it starts to dwindle very quickly, especially when you're looking at there will be 100 billion or 200, 2 billion will be allocated for SMEs, small businesses and sponsorship owners in particular. That's a very low amount. 100 billion put aside for the protection of jobs, which is fine, but are those jobs only in the formal corporate sector?
Again, we don't know how that works exactly.
So these things need to be explained a lot more clearly by governments. And another thing I want to talk about this 500 billion Rand is that we need 100% transparency regarding this. Governments, I understand governments want to play stuff close to their chests, but in this regard, folks need to know where that money is going and that it is not lining the pockets of corrupt officials.
Well, we should get more clarity, hopefully, at least, from Finance Minister Tito Mboweni. He's going to speak later today.
Yeah.
Hopefully you can break down that 500 billion a bit further for us.
I hope so, and I hope that he has measures in place to make sure that corruption is dealt with swiftly and aggressively, because we can't have in a year's time going, this comrade decided that they were going to take 100 billion for themselves, and now we need to have a commission of inquiry for another year before it gets dealt with.
You need to pay all the lawyers for that.
Yeah, so I think that this needs to be policed very, very efficiently and with like a crystal eye on it, a magnifying glass on this 500 million rand, even though it's a big amount. And anybody that can't produce how they spent this money or how it was dispersed, any government official needs to be dealt with swiftly. Plain and simple. No quarter.
Not killed.
No.
Very menacing there, Brendan.
I don't... Why would I say that? We don't have a death penalty in this country. I mean, in the realms of the law, they need to be dealt with very swiftly.
Another man fine and 1 month of paid leave.
Yeah. Like one minister who that had lunch. I hope that lunch probably was worth more than a grand. But anyway... So I think there's some positives, but a lot of this positivity is hinging on us assuming the best case scenario. And we still need to wait for government to outline this stuff in detail. Alert level 4 is still something to worry about. It still means that we need to stay at home, that we need to practice strict hygiene standards. And the like. So I think that we are far from out of the woods just yet. But as long as everybody keeps towing the line as they have, and folks stay inside where they are able to, and government addresses some of the biggest issues at the moment, which is food, housing for some people, and make sure that Eskom doesn't go down the drain while we're all locked down, then I think we'll all be fine. I just had to whisper it because I don't want to say it out loud and then something happens next week.
Yeah, so I didn't want to mention it, but because you brought it up, when it was announced that we were going to have levels to signify bad stuff, people were like, oh no, load shedding all over again.
So you'll have to check your water restrictions, your load shedding, your COVID-19 alert level.
You know what they're going to do in the future when you like... you're looking for somewhere to rent, or if you're very privileged, somewhere to buy, you'll go into the house or the flat or whatever, and the person in front of there will hand you a sheet, and there'll be like three numbers, and it will talk about the load shedding numbers, the water numbers, and then the alert status in terms of COVID-19. That's how we're going to have to shop in the future. That's how you decide where to live.
Yeah, so I think we've got some positive stuff coming out of this. It seems that the lockdown is having the intended effect. I think that is an important point to note, that all of us staying at home is not without purpose and is not pointless. There is a reason for it. And in terms of the figures, it's looking like we are doing pretty well in terms of this pandemic compared to other countries around the world. I'm not saying that we're the best. The World Health Organization did on Thursday commend South Africa for its response to the COVID-19 pandemic, which kind of made me pop my shirt a little bit. I was like, yeah, boy, check us out. But yeah, I think everybody needs to just keep pushing and doing the best that they can. I think that one of the things that Cyril Ramaphosa said that kind of make every time he says it kind of gives me a little bit of, I have some hope. We must not give up now. I'm asking you to stay strong. I'm asking you to remain united, stay home, stay safe. And I think that's a really good message to come from our president. And yeah, I think next week will be the determining factor for us to see how things go. And we'll take it from there, I suppose. We've been waffling on for quite some time now.
There'll be another Afrikaast, rain or shine.
Yeah, there will be another Afrikaast next week. But I think for now, does anybody have anything else they want to add in closing?
Just listen to the government to stay at home, please.
Yeah.
Robin, and also, if we fail now and we start breaking lockdown and everything, then the last lockdown and everything is for nothing.
Yeah,
that's what people really need to understand. It's not a bank. You can't put 1 week into savings and then withdraw that week later on. Everything disappears if you break it at any stage. Mm-hmm. So just keep that in mind.
Robin?
My closing remarks are for everyone to be clinical, because our margin for error is so small.
Absolutely. And from me, thank you, Cyril Ramaphosa, for letting me buy cigarettes. I really appreciate you.
It was a specific favor to Brendan.
It was specific. Yeah, I put in the request, guys. Yeah. It's all on me. No, just kidding. Stay safe, everybody. Remain resilient. Make use of digital channels to speak to people. Have Zoom hangouts with people. Use House Party to have parties with friends. Obviously, take the necessary security precautions. I have to say that. But like Clinton says, is that if we lose focus now and we just start doing whatever we want, everything we've done is for naught. And you know what I hate doing? Work twice.
Yeah. The only thing worse than working is working twice.
Exactly. So everybody stay home, stay safe, and carry on listening to the AfriCast. Listen to us chat for a couple of minutes. From us, though, that's going to be it for this week. Thank you so much for joining me, Clinton Matos.
It's a pleasure.
And Robin Chetty, thank you for joining me.
Anytime.
Sweet. And to everybody else listening, thank you so much for joining us. We'll see you next week. Goodbye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.